you got to share your Taylor Burns story.
Yes. I went up to Taylor Burns after the O-line D-line one-on-ones were done. And I told him, I congratulated him. I thought he did a pretty good job. And he looked over at me with a side eye and he said, yeah, pretty good for a cardboard cutout, eh?
Hello and welcome to At The 55, your home for OUA football. Me and Tom are back on the mics with a CFL Invitational Combine special coming your way. Tom was lucky enough to attend live and direct from Waterloo, and we're going to get all of his thoughts on the outings by the various athletes and just on combines in general. But before we get to all of that, Tom, how the heck are you doing, my friend?
As always, my friend, I am doing very well. Maybe it's just because I have a very positive outlook on life. It's very much a cup half full for me in most of the things that I do. But anytime I've been a part of a football event, whether that's a game, whether that's a combine, whatever it is that brings people from different areas, from different teams all together in one spot, the collaboration and the just general overall positivity in these spaces are just awesome. I've had the chance to go to a couple of great cups, the ones that were hosted in Hamilton, and seeing all of the CFL fans from across the way, even if it's only two teams that are playing, the entirety of the CFL is represented in all of those spaces, and they're just people coming together because they love football, and it's very much the same thing here. Obviously, the athletes themselves are really gaming, and they're trying to prove themselves in order to try to get drafted and go into this great league, but talking with all of the people on the auxiliary, the other guys like Deshaun Stevens from at Persevere, and all of the people who want to see the league grow along with the coaches that are there from the OUA and getting a chance to talk to them, it was just wholeheartedly a super positive experience and just reaffirmed my love for this great game, specifically the Canadian football game.
Absolutely. And I had the privilege of going 2 years ago, both to the, at the time, the regional, when there were still the two regional invitational combines, and then the national being here in Toronto at the time. And I echo your sentiments from my experience going there. I wish I could have been there with you. I just, as you know, I had some feelings about taking a day off the Friday before going into March break. At the end of the day, so many of my kids weren't there anyway, so it probably wouldn't have mattered nonetheless. But I'm so happy you had a stellar time. And as I said as well, if you couldn't have made it, I probably would have been that much more bullish on making my way out there just so we could have gotten some brand recognition out there. But Tom, you were there. You were live and direct at Waterloo. First and foremost, Tom, this was your first time actually being at Waterloo or like being at an event and experiencing the field house. I've been there a couple times. What do you think of that facility?
Unbelievable. The setup that's in there is just outstanding. I had the chance to speak to a couple of coaches that were there from a few different OUA spots, both from Todd Galloway at Laurier, spoke with our guy, Mike McDonald, from Guelph. He was there as well. And both of them the entire time are just looking around going, my God, I wish that we had a facility like this. I wish we could do something. Obviously, Guelph still has that indoor field house, but it is dominated by track. It is what it is, and kind of nitpicking in that regard. But still, every other coach that was there outside of the Waterloo guys, obviously, were just salivating at how good this indoor facility looked.
Yeah, no, it's a spectacular resource for them to have. The fact that it's connected to the main athletic building where the players can go straight from the locker room. That whole facility is terrific. It, you know, again, so much love for Waterloo region and the football in that community, both at the university level and as well with the various OSFL teams and stuff like that and what they're doing out there. It's great. And I think that's a good example of it. Before we get into the specifics of it, Tom, you know, we were talking a bit before, you know, I was asking, I didn't actually know whether you had any experience with combines towards the end of your career. You didn't get the invite yourself. But when you think about combines, whether we think specifically from the offensive line standpoint or any of these positions, how much stock do you put into the actual nature of these combines. I know it's somewhat, there is a bit of a debate. Some people are strict, like, no, watch game tape, go through the film. That's what you need to see. Sometimes the diamonds in the rough or the ones that slip through the cracks are the guys that don't test well. But you know what? You don't play a game laying on your back, bench pressing 225 off, or, you know, speed on a field isn't measured from like a perfectly curated stance and, you know, your own timing to shoot off the line in a straight path with no interference and nothing else. And some people do put a lot of stock into those things and saying that, like, it shows work ethic and commitment to a part of the game that is so integral into your success on the field, and the fact that you've obviously committed yourself to this aspect of your training, and that's going to translate to how you're going to commit to studying the game and all these types of things. Generally speaking, are you pro combine? Are you somewhere in the middle? Like, what are your thoughts about combines when we talk about CFL or NFL?
The way that I kind of view combines is I like to view them as something of a staple in terms of how much work you're putting in. Specifically with this one in particular, a lot of these guys, most of these guys are from last year. They played in the East-West Bowl, and where they also had a combine. And so when you can compare numbers, you can really, it jumps off the page, who are the guys who have been putting in the work? Now, obviously, when you start taking a look at things and you go, somebody's benching this or running that or whatever else, I don't really put any stock into those numbers in particular, because like you said, how many times is an offensive lineman going to be sprinting 40 yards down the field? You know, even when you have the bench press, you know, obviously you want that to be big and strong or whatever else. If you don't know how to properly utilize that thing, it doesn't matter at all. So I like to use it something as a benchmark in terms of how much somebody has been putting in the work to try to get better, because it's very, you can't hide during when you can compare numbers to numbers in that sense. But overall, I've had so many people who just constantly say, oh my gosh, look at how much he benched. Look at how fast they are in the 40. Look at this, look at that, whatever. And if it doesn't translate onto the field, then who gives a damn? So, and there was a few instances here where some guys, maybe they didn't test as well, and maybe they tested pretty well. And when you get into the Canadian version, which I love so much more than the American one, where you actually put on pads and you do one-on-ones, O-line, D-line, running backs against linebackers, and even receivers against DBs, you can see who are the ones that can translate their test results into great play, and who are the ones who are testing fantastic but don't know how to properly utilize it.
Yeah, I really like that take. And going to your point of the progress, maybe it'll come up in the nature of the conversation that we're having, but I know you've already mentioned when we were talking about your time there of some guys that took a step up from their East-West numbers and some guys who took a step down. And of course, there's a whole host of things that play into that. I know that just the testing we used to do at Guelph, my numbers went down fourth year into fifth year. And that's because in that Yates Cup loss to your McMaster Marauders in 14, I partially separated my shoulder. So I was not benching. And right. And so I still was healthy throughout the season. If you were an outsider perspective, you saw that. But then you might not have realized all those other things going on. And what the emphasis on me was making sure I had a stable shoulder, not that I could. So again, it's instructive, but there's still all these layers to it. Mm-hmm. Tom, going into this, obviously the names were out there, who you were going to be looking at, who you were going to be seeing. And what's cool again with this being now an invitational combine, as opposed to in the past where, if memory serves, it was an East and a West regional combine with a select number from each getting the invite up to the CFL national combine. It's the one invitational. Dudes from all across the country, both at the U Sports level and the CJFL level, which is something I want to get to. Mm-hmm. But when you saw this list of names, you're going, you know, obviously just the experience being there, the conversations you got to have were just part of the excitement, enjoying the day. But who are the names going in that you were like, I'm so interested to watch this guy, and whether it was in terms of the testing or for those one-on-ones or for just being able to say, hey, so-and-so, I'm Tom. I just want to tell you what a big fan I am of yours. Who were the guys that you were the most excited to see in any of those capacities?
Well, first and foremost, it's the guys that I I coached back in the day at Guelph in 2019. Those first year players who were there are now going into their draft eligible years. And so getting a chance to see Curtis Woodmansey, Joshua Campbell, and Kane Stevenson was just, it was really awesome to see all three of those guys and really compete at the high level. Getting a chance to see Colter Woodmansey, who was there as well, and even AJ Allen, who were also on those teams. It was really cool to be able to see those guys. But I am, if nothing else, I'm an OUA football fan first and foremost. So I wanted to see the Justin Sukar. I really wanted to see Taylor Burns, my guy. I shouldn't be swearing, but still, my McMaster guy. Let's see him try to show out. Let's see him do something. Devontae Ballantyne, those guys. I wanted to see the OUA guys really represent here because, you know, we talked about it in the previous pod, talking about Western and losing in that national semi. I still want to put the OUA. You know, the OUA is the best football conference across the country, and I still firmly believe Darn that too. In terms of the parity between everybody. And I wanted them to really show out in that regard. So while I was really happy to see the Guelph guys that I got a chance to coach, I was really just excited for all of the OUA guys to really show out.
You know, and I want to go back to one of those Guelph names in particular, but Tom, you got to share your Taylor Burns story.
Yes. I went up to Taylor Burns after the O-line D-line one-on-ones were done, and I told him, I congratulated him. I thought he did a pretty good job. And he looked over at me with a side eye, and he said, "Yeah, pretty good for a cardboard cutout, eh?" And we had a good laugh about it. Obviously, the McMaster boys heard our little comments about them early on in the season here. And he told me that they wrote it down on a whiteboard at the very top of the whiteboard. So they stared at it every single game going into the season here. So we gave them some bulletin board material for sure. And we had a good chuckle about that. But once again, it's a strange concept to say you and I just talking into a microphone and there's actually people on the other end of it listening.
Yeah, yeah. Oh my gosh. That killed when you told me about that story. Yeah, bulletin board or otherwise, though I don't know how much that helped. But let's continue because you mentioned the Guelph.
Anything to get back at my McMaster Marauders, eh, buddy?
1-3 in Yates Cups, man. I gotta try and throw some daggers where I can. But you know, when you talk about some of the guys you got to see, what's interesting is there's a handful of guys, and we'll go back to the Guelph piece to highlight one of them. And a few names I might have to scan through quickly because I think I didn't write them down. But looking at a guy like Christian Stewart from Guelph, mm-hmm. who going into the 2022 year, where we were looking at all these names, and that was a weird year. And I almost want to like take some time to return to that, where we're going through this defense and just seeing like all these guys that then just like Ben Lacks of the world and some other names who then for a variety of reasons weren't there anymore. And Christian Stewart dealing with, frankly, I don't remember the details, so I don't want to speculate. Maybe you know, but a guy who, you know, we were kind of and talking with people around the Guelph program of being like, yeah, this is going to be like, you know, Guelph's had some really stellar pass rushers from that defensive end position, that kind of outside linebacker position. And like, this is that next guy, as well, thinking of a guy in Kojo Odum who showed up for Western, who, as we were saying in that last Western pod, hasn't been on the field for some time with them. There may be some other names that I'm missing in the mix, but obviously you talking about the Guelph guys and thinking of Christian Stewart that we haven't seen on the field. And again, with Western, a guy who I deeply admire his game and also just who he is as a human being in Kojo. What was it like seeing some of these guys? And like, was there any conversation about, like, obviously you said you saw Coach McDonald, of just like, well, just what was the thought process of seeing them out here and like the next steps for these guys?
Mm-hmm. Well, first and foremost, both of these guys are two players that were very, very, well, they were playing at the top echelon of their game going into their respective seasons. Obviously, Kojo's been dealing with a couple of injuries that kept him out for the past couple of years. Christian Stewart had some academic issues, which kept him out this past year as well. But it was just from somebody as a football fan who wants to see people succeed, it was so awesome being able to see Christian Stewart and Kojo Odum get out there again, get a chance to show their thing. And while the two of them undoubtedly are phenomenal athletes. You could tell that there's some rust there. They hadn't played in the past couple of years. Kojo with his injury and Christian with his academic issue. So there was a little bit of rust there. I think if they had an entire year of properly playing this past year and then going into this, I think they would have tested much better. But they were trying to get their legs back under them as they were going through things. And when you have guys who are already in that stance who have played that game this past year and kind of gone into that, I think they were at a little bit of a disadvantage, but by no means did they do the worst. I still think that they had solid showings and they were kind of middle of the pack, but I think both of them would have benefited a whole lot more if they would have been able to play this past year.
And I think both those guys are great examples of just straight gamers, mm-hmm. where, and obviously as far as the game tape that one would turn to see that is somewhat limited in both cases, but when those guys are playing and doing their thing, it's evident, even if you don't know the game or don't know the position that well, how special those two guys are. So just it made me happy to know that they were there, and whether they're still knocking some of the rust off, that they are on that track to improvement, because both these guys, it would be a darn shame to not see them play any more football at any level, because they are such special talents and make what we do that much more enjoyable. Obviously, as you mentioned, you use the numbers, the metrics to compare with East-West to kind of get a sense of the progress. And as we said, that still can be a little flawed because there's things that we don't always see if we're not in those locker rooms or having conversations with some of these guys. But in terms of whether it plays into that component, in terms of biggest surprises, and that could be positively or negatively, and doesn't even need to be just from the standpoint of guys who might have tested poorly at East-West and really showed out, or vice versa, or just a guy that maybe, yeah, we've been watching him for his club and he's been doing all right, and then he really came out and showed out in this environment, or, not that we ever really want to throw guys under the bus, but if the flip side's true where it's a guy who's like, who's been like a dude for a team and kind of got exposed in a couple environments, who would you say are some of those biggest surprises, either like positively or negatively, either from the testing standpoint or the one-on-one reps?
I think even before we got into the actual testing themselves, I got a chance to get in there and start taking a look at some of the guys. Now, obviously, I hadn't seen all of these guys outside of their equipment before in that, but the one guy who really impressed me in terms of just the physical look and the body shape was Curtis Woodmansey. When he came out this past season, I want to say they don't have his weight listed on their roster, but I want to say he was 305, 310, maybe somewhere around that range. Well, when he's in there, he's 285, and he is his broad shoulders. He's slimmed down. He was moving very well, especially in the one-on-ones. It was really impressive to see that. He dropped close to 20 pounds and was just kind of doing his thing when he was out there. So I was really impressed with just that, and the effort and the work that he had been putting in there was pretty impressive. And I mean, you could tell it once again, based off of the stats and the things that he was doing here in the bench in particular. He didn't get a chance to participate in a lot of the other categories in the East-West because I think he was dealing with an injury, but still went there for just the combine aspect. He benched 18 reps in the East-West Bowl and then 24 in this regional combine. So in just a year's worth of time to add 6 additional reps, that's pretty impressive and kind of showcased to me that he was putting in the work. When you start taking a look at all of the, and obviously being an offensive lineman, I love to see the bench press in particular. But Mitchell Price, defensive lineman out of McMaster, he puts it up 30 times. But in the East-West version of this, he did it 35. And once again, it goes back to, he might be dealing with an injury or something else might be happening. He didn't participate in the 40-yard dash as well, so something else might have been going on here as well. But just wanted to shout that out. 30 reps on 225 is still pretty damn impressive, no matter how you slice it. And even Tanner Nelms, once again, stick to the bench. He puts it up 22 times. Very, very impressive here. I know that there was the general vibe that I got when talking to the CFL scouts that were there was that as a whole, I think they were expecting the testing numbers to be better than what they were. And I think there was a tiny bit of disappointment in there, not to say anyone in particular really had bad numbers, but just as a whole, I think they were expecting the 40s to be a little bit faster, the cone drills as well. But the other thing that I wanted to mention here, obviously, the people who really showed out, the people we're going to focus on and talk about, are fantastic at what they do. They were training for it, whatever. I was shocked at how few people or how many people had very clearly not been training for the specific events that you'd be doing at the combine. Even going into the 40-yard dash, people didn't know how to properly set up for it. You could see some people almost going into like a defensive line 3-point stance or an offensive line 3-pointed stance in certain cases. And even the cone drill, you could tell there were people, there was a lot of people there who had not been specifically training for those drills. And whether or not you want to put a lot of stock into the actual combine itself and the events or the testing, you should still know how to properly do it. You should still have some area of focusing on that because that's what the CFL scouts are going to be looking at. So regardless of how you feel, you should still be able to focus on that, train on that, and continue to do well in that. So I was surprised at how many people looked awkward in terms of how they were doing things. Now, obviously, like there's certain things like bench press, it is what it is, but you have guys and like more than a few who are going up to the vert, for example, who are like 3 or 4 steps away from the actual, where you're supposed to jump from. So they're jumping almost like they're towards it. And while you think maybe that's going to get you a little bit better, if you're jumping towards, you're not putting all of your energy into going up. There is some that's going forward, even if it's just a little bit. So you're taking away from your actual vert. So there was a lot of aspects in there. And at that point in time, like if every CFL staffer that was there is coaching people on how to properly do the event, oh, it's going to take all day. And at that point in time, like this is the CFL. You should be ready for this, So I was a little surprised at that.
Yeah, that's interesting because again, maybe that speaks to it just changing of the guard of or the mentality of what people think about combines. But until the CFL says that we don't need to do these anymore, yeah, you think you'd still show up. It's a job interview in essence, and you're told what the criteria is, the success criteria they're looking for. Sticking with the bench press, we talked about this guy on the Western pod, but just seeing by the numbers, Richard Dubofor putting up 12 reps on bench, where this dude, you were talking about just the physical stature of him at corner for Western, but then just specifically at 6'3", doing 12 reps. While then still running a 4.6, like again, just like, and I know you talked about some of his one-on-ones that maybe we'll get to in a bit, but like that really stands out for sure. What I want to talk about though is when kind of two things, a couple years ago when I got to go, it was kind of funny, I guess, in that the school that produced the most attendees, at least amongst OUA teams, was York, and it speaks to a bit of a trend, and we talked about it with Dakota as part of the exit meeting interviews. We talked about it all year long, where they do still get talent. I mean, you talk about the Woodmansey, shout out Toronto football players having success at the U Sport level, and then in Coulter's case, of course, at the CFL level as well, and other dudes as well who have made it to that reach. And this year, York only sends one, Jason Javier Messier. And you were saying he was looking mighty impressive all day long. And again, that shouldn't come as a surprise because we've been watching this guy now for 3, 4 years at York and what he does and the nature of that position where, you know what, if he's one-on-one with his dude, if it's a passing down, you're just going to get to see how good he is against his opponent. When it's, how good is he at anchoring that edge down when the run's coming to his side? He obviously plays within a defensive system, but you're still able to watch him week in, week out, and then be able to analyze just how good this guy is. And we know the talent is there, but he obviously had, from what you've told me and actually seeing a couple clips that have gone online, a really impressive day.
He really did. And I will steal a quote that Deshaun Stevens, who runs at Persevere, also said, "The biggest surprise from Jason Javier Messier is that he was invited to the regional and not the national. That dude, you see the production that he's been giving out for York each and every single year. He's been there for, you know, the 4 or 5 years that he's been at York, and he's been the best player on that team for the 4 or 5 years that he's been at York. So I was surprised to see him here and rather than there, but he showcased why he should have gone to the national. I mean, even in his testing, 6'2.5", 230 pounds, puts up the 225 19 times, runs a 4.8 40. Really dominated in the one-on-ones. I was surprised some of the tackles seemed to be doing okay against him as a whole. But the one specifically, I'm pretty sure Persevere himself, Deshaun posted as well, was that spin move where he just comes off completely clean going right to the quarterback here. His athleticism is there. The strength, the speed is all there. I think that he's going to do very well, and I'd be shocked if he comes back to York again next year. I think he's going to stick wherever he goes.
And then add in the piece that he tied with a few guys as far as the best vert coming out of that combine as well. So the explosiveness, the strength, the speed, it's all there. We see it for the last couple of years. But, you know, tying in with that piece that a few years ago, York sending the most guys. This year, that award goes to my Ottawa Gigi's, sending five names out there. And you were mentioning, and as I looked through the names, it struck me as a bit odd that one of them actually may have been a CJFL guy. And I do want to talk about the emergence of what seems to be more CJFL guys, just generally having that conversation. But from Ottawa, we get Kevin Anderson from the defensive line, Anthony Grigg, who's listed as a receiver from Ottawa, but I believe that's who you said played for the Hurricanes. Jonathan Fournier at fullback. But then are my guys,
your guys,
in Maxime Mellefond and Nicolas Gendron just going off in this combine? I mean, you know, I think that was one of the first things when you, I'm leaving work on Friday and you're like, call me. And we finally get on the phone. And you're just like, all right, you know, your guys had a day. Talk about the day that these two stellar wideouts for the Gigi's had.
Yeah. Well, first and foremost, I was sitting with Deshaun Stevens and shout out Delius as well, as we were watching the wide receiver one-on-ones. And I believe, if I remember correctly, Gendron has a bit of a comeback route. He ran out about 10-15 yards and then came back towards the quarterback and made a really great contested catch against the DB that's there. And everybody's kind of oohing and aahing. And I, out of nowhere, go, that's Zach's guy. That's his guy.
Thank you, Tom. This is why I love you.
But once again, the Ottawa players really, especially the Maxim and Gendron, really showed out in the one-on-ones. You know, we're a positive podcast and we like to try to keep things light. The quarterbacks struggled, we'll say that. I don't think that they gave their receivers the best balls pretty consistently there, and they struggled a fair bit. So you could argue against, you know, maybe there's some drops. There was a lot that were just purely uncatchable, which is kind of unfortunate in that regard. But Mellefond, it's interesting because when you look at, once again, this goes back to, you know, the testing that we were talking about and how you're using it. Gendron runs a faster 40 than Mellefond. Gendron ran a 4.5 and Mellefond ran a 4.7. But the styles in which they were running routes, Gendron being that like slot receiver-esque, running a lot of comebacks, he's running those slants, outs, ins, and things of that nature, whereas Mellefond is taking off and running and he's doing those streaks. You would never guess that Mellefond tested slower than Gendron did, but the way he was going. When he gets a solid break off a guy, he's tearing. Like, he's completely by the Mellefond is. So it was really impressive for him to showcase that speed. And obviously, he's calling the routes that he specifically wants to showcase that he's able to do. But still, you're utilizing the abilities that you have in the right sense to really showcase yourself. Gendron really just showcasing solid hands that he had. There was a few times where he had some really good battles. I think one of them in particular with Richard Adubafor, which was an awesome thing to watch. But for the most part, Gendron brought down everything that was thrown his way, which was pretty cool. Mellefond had to try to make some really tough adjustments midair. I think there was one in particular where he was running a streak and kind of had to turn opposite shoulder to try to find the ball. Unfortunately, wasn't able to. But both of those guys in particular really showed out for the Ottawa GGs. And I really wanted to make sure that we gave him a shout out here, especially Gendron. He was really, really impressive with what he was able to do.
Well, and going back to talking about what you were saying about Javier Messier, or specifically what Deschamps commented about him being a bit of a snub, because I don't have the names in front of me, I probably should have pulled that up, of the guys that did get the invite from the Invitational to the National. It seems like, in addition to Jason from York, whether it's one or both of those Ottawa guys, couple of names that might have got the short end of the stick. And hey, normally it's a pretty exclusive group that are getting that call up at the end of the day to go to the National Combine. Who are some of the other guys? I don't know if you have the full list of names of guys who got pulled up to the National in front of you, but as far as guys that you know who didn't get the nod, who are some of the ones that in your books should have or would have been like on the cusp of getting that next call?
Going through the names of people who got called first, Yanni Gudafel, apologies, out of Bishops, Jackson Sambach, once again, excuse me, out of Saskatchewan, Owen Mueller, offensive lineman from Windsor, Ethan Kalra, offensive lineman from Waterloo, Nicolas Gendron out of Ottawa got the call, Maxime Malenfant did not. Jason Janvier Messier, obviously. Dawson Marchant, who was from Ottawa Sooners, I believe, from the CJFL, and Kane Stevenson, all guys who had the opportunity who got called up to go. Malenfant, while he did showcase, there was a lot of good things that I liked. I don't think that he did enough, at least from what I saw, to really validate going to the National. No disrespect against him. I just don't think that he was given enough opportunities. I don't think that the balls that he was given or thrown were necessarily the greatest. But the two guys in particular that I was surprised that I thought were going to go for sure were Justin Sukar and Tanner Nelms. Both of those guys really had solid days. I loved what I saw from them in terms of the grit that they showed and whatever else. Once again, I was a little biased. I also thought that Curtis Woodmansey did enough to showcase why he should be going there as well, but he didn't, obviously. But those two guys in Sukar and Nelms, I really thought did enough to get there. Their numbers. Obviously, we called out Tanner Nelms and his bench press. They did pretty decent in the actual testing, but man, in some of the one-on-ones, Justin Sukar in particular showcased his speed, showcased the hands that he has. He was really, really impressive to watch, and so was Tanner Nelms. He showed that he could go out for a couple of passes from the running back position, but in particular, his blocking. They did O-line, or sorry, running back and versus linebacker one-on-ones in terms of blocking for quarterback pressures. And typically speaking, in that kind of a drill where you have so much space, you have so like that is a defense first drill. And if you're not as a defender winning 90% of your reps there, something's going on, or at least getting close to the quarterback in that regard. Tanner Nelms did a phenomenal job blocking very consistently all of the guys they were going up against. And once again, utilizing that bench because once he settled in, he was bench pressing certain linebackers off of him and really showcasing some positive work there. Now, I will say, I was speaking with a few CFL staffers, guys who are just from the CFL, not from a particular team. And they said that typically in these regional combines, there's a lot of quote unquote games that are played amongst the CFL scouts. Some scouts might see something in a guy that they actually really like, but they don't want to tip off anybody else in terms of what they saw. So they purposefully will not ask them to go to the national combine, but keep them in the back of their head so they draft them at some point during the CFL draft. So there's some guys who might be on the cusp there that there's a little bit of mind games being played. So just because you didn't get selected for the national does not mean that you didn't show out. But I thought that was pretty interesting as well.
That's very interesting. Okay, I like that. That's okay. A little dirty pool by some of these scouts. We've made some passing mention at a couple of the CF pardon me, CGFL players being here. Three players from the St. Clair Saints, a Quinty Skyhawk, an Ottawa Sooner, and a London Beefeater. Six in total. I don't have the numbers in front of me from years past. I believe that outdoes the number who were there in 2022 when I was there. And obviously, without those numbers, I can't speak for sure to a trend that is on the rise or otherwise. But I certainly have a feeling, whether it is reflected in the numbers or not, that we are starting to see some of the CGFL teams as a much more legitimate route and pathway for young athletes to make their way into the CFL. These teams are, you know, have legitimate talent. They're organized much more professionally, if you will, than, you know, stories that you used to hear of it being a little more just like, if you don't come to practice, whatever, show up for the games. Just some of the stories that I remember I've heard of some clubs going back a few years. And tying that in with a piece that we've discussed in a few capacities of the, I don't know how many years it is now, but the process for a non-Canadian athlete to become nationalized as a Canadian, as a national player for the CFL, as a result of however many years is they need to play or graduate out of one of the U Sports programs. What do you just make generally of, as a conversation piece, and maybe we should, you know, we could talk on it a bit here and maybe table it to get some other folks in from a couple of these who have some touch points into CGFL and maybe some Americans who've been able to get into the league as nationals, just as far as what the CFL is and just, or not what the CFL is, but I guess just as a means of getting into the CFL, because just quickly on my, from my standpoint, at least from the CGFL perspective, I love the notion that A, you can continue to play high caliber football that is, if not on the level, a close facsimile to U Sports football in that same age range that you would be without having to say, like, university's not for everyone. I always think it's a weird thing we tie on to the notion of trying to make your way to a professional career that, well, you got to go to university. So I love that it's a different outlet for that too. But just of people from traditionally less conventional means of getting in the CFL now being able to have that access. Like, what do you make of that? Again, I don't have the numbers to back up how many of these non-Canadians are getting nationalized through this process, or if there is more of a trend of these CGFL players, but it feels like it's heading that way a little bit more. And how do you feel that affects the strength of whether it's the CFL or even U Sports product?
Yeah, I think any aspect, any way that you're able to get into the CFL, especially be eligible for the CFL draft, is a great thing. I love the idea that you can get there from the CGFL, specifically because of how much more difficult it is to go that route. Now, you've got guys who have got the talent there for sure. One guy that I think really epitomizes what I'm trying to say here was Anthony Grigg, wide receiver. He played for the University of Ottawa, but then for whatever reason, was not there anymore. And he went to the Hamilton Hurricanes. The biggest thing that these CJFL players do not have access to is the training side of things. Mm. They do not have the strength coaches there. They don't have the amazing facilities that these universities have. And so they're really on their own. And so when you look at Anthony Grigg, especially on his numbers and his testing, he only puts up 225 once and he runs a 5 flat on a 40-yard dash, which as a wide receiver is relatively pretty slow. However, you get into the one-on-ones and he actually performed very, very well. He had great body control. His route running was outstanding. And that 5 flat really didn't seem to matter all that much. Certainly once he catches the ball, if he does get some any open field, then that might come into play with much faster people, at least on paper. But he did not allow that to affect him when he was going out. Once again, the route selection that he was picking really played to his strengths here. He was able to body out a lot of people, reaching up with the long arms, making those good catches and things. So I was really impressed with that. And obviously you could tell when he's out the field, he's working his tail off and he's doing his thing, but he doesn't have the, not just the facilities, But in your day as a university athlete, you have allotted time to say, yeah, you've got classes. Yeah, you might have work or whatever else. But during 6 a.m. to 7 a.m. or whatever that is, you have dedicated training time with top class facilities and a strength and conditioning coach there to try to get you ready and get you ready for the next year or the combine itself. So to come across that as not only not having access to that regularly, but having to really rely on your own self-discipline, where there's maybe a lot of teams, like you said, which might really struggle with numbers, which may not have people consistently coming out, like gets in the way or whatever the case may be. But to go through all of that and still be recognized as somebody to look for to go for the CFL draft, I think is very, very impressive in that regard.
Definitely. And I think also just seeing more of these guys come out just legitimizes the idea that, like, it's not some kind of a bias of like, oh, it's just CGFL, that you might watch the tape and say, well, it's not the same caliber. I think it's just further growing this game and giving more people a chance to play, which, you know, in case you don't know, me and Tom are quite fond of this game. So having more people able to play it, just un petit peu. Last thing I want to just go to real quick, because obviously these combines, whatever you make of them, whether they are a good indicator of potential ability at the next level, somewhat decent indicator, not an indicator at all, it's all building towards the draft. It's all building towards the upcoming CFL season. Some of these guys are going to return. We've obviously seen the impact players have had over the years of getting that experience, getting into the professional levels for a training camp, rookie camp, whatever it might be, coming back, all these things. But I'm just so excited thinking about the draft. When we look through now shifting gears to specifically the combine roster for the National, which I believe you said is going to be in Winnipeg, correct, Tom?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And neither of us will be there. Of course, we'll be excited to see what the outcomes are. But just to go through the list of names of OUA guys that we have there, and again, that's not to say that any of the OUA guys that you were privy to watching at that combine in Waterloo won't get their name called, whether it's a function of those trickeries that scouts play, but just hearing some of these names and just me sitting here being so excited for this draft from the OUA perspective. So just to go through it quickly, Ryan Berta from Queens offensive line. Actually, that one kind of confused me because I thought he got drafted last year and was in a camp and then went back. But I they had a couple guys at Queens that went to camps and then came back, so maybe he wasn't up. Anyways, Ryan Berta from Queens, Lawrence Bauer Kane from Western, Luke Brubaker from Laurier, Jared Kasari from Queens, scrolling down here, Cooper Hamilton from Laurier, Tyson Hergott from Waterloo, Owen Hubert from Mac, Mohsen Jamal from Western, Louis Laveau and Patrick Lavoie, both from Carleton, my guy Ben Miracle from Ottawa, Jackson Morkin from Windsor, Olivier Mwambi from Queens, Scott Murray from Guelph, Max Nixon from Western, Brandon Omanua from Laurier, Ife Onyeka from Carleton, and then Anthony Souls from Queens, George Una from Windsor, Kevin Victome from Ottawa, and Van Wishart from Queens. And you know, you read through that list and like, those are some ballers that we're sending out to that combine. Like, nothing against the names that we were talking about from the invitation that you were at. Obviously, those guys are studs. Overall speaks to just the high caliber talent we have right now going in the OUA. But just like, that list has me so excited for the CFL combine, the CFL draft. And just, again, we've talked about this so much, whether it's a function of, you know, going back to our conversation about Western, all these teams that are closing that gap, however you want to frame it, the 1 through 9, 1 through 10 of the OUA being so strong, still to some degrees. Obviously, we'll revisit our tiers as we did going into last year, as we get closer to the season, to give a little more depth into how we might, you know, separate these teams. But like, just seeing those names has me just so giddy for this draft and just for the current state of OUA football.
Oh my gosh. Like, if we could, if this wasn't in Winnipeg, if it was somewhere in the OUA and it didn't cost an arm and a leg to friggin' travel in Canada, we'd be there in a heartbeat, especially especially for those one-on-ones, man. Because this is the thing that people don't quite on. Well, maybe not everybody is kind of privy to. It's one thing to have the one-on-ones themselves. You start to see everybody kind of going through things, whatever. But the CFL scouts are watching the entire time you're doing these one-on-ones. At a certain point in time, the randomness of the one-on-ones stop, and then the matchups start happening. And even if you didn't see in the regular one-on-one time the best against the best, the CFL scouts will make sure. They'll come out and say offensive lineman number 30 against defensive lineman number 70 or something like that. And then suddenly you're like, oh, snap, these are two of the best players that we've seen so far. Let's see how they do. And those are the most exciting times as a fan, first and foremost, watching everything here. And so, A, you get a sense into who wants to see a little bit more from this person, who wants to see what's going on here, and who has eyes. And the other thing is, too, how do you perform as a player, knowing that you specifically were called out, you were asked to go again, and against, you know, somebody else who's really doing their thing here. And the one person that I really wanted to call out in this, who I think did the best in those matchups out of everybody, was Ethan Kalra, offensive lineman out of Waterloo. It's one thing to showcase where you're doing, what you're going, and getting into your regular spot. Ethan played guard at Waterloo. He played left tackle, left guard. He played the entirety of the offensive line to showcase what he was able to do. And even when he got called out in terms of who was going against where, constantly changed up where he was going. And I don't think he lost a single one-on-one rep. He was very dominant in what he was doing. And I really wanted to make sure we're two offensive linemen here. If I get a chance to call out an offensive lineman, you damn know I'm going to. And especially somebody who was really putting in the work and kicking some serious tail there. So I was really impressed with Kalra in particular. But then to go back to the National Combine, like you're saying, it's one thing to have all of those star players. Oh, we're just going to put two of the best freaking players that we've seen up against one another here in a one-on-one matchup that CFL scouts have specifically asked for. Let's see how well you do. My God, that is a football fan's dream.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear them call up Kevin Mittal on the one side and then say, Louis Laveau, let's put you on this guy, big dog. Let's see what you can do. Tom, that's all I got for you. I think we covered a lot of depth on that. Final words to you about your experience in Waterloo for the Invitational. Obviously, you know, that was a great response on all the things you're excited about, but just coming up to draft season and everything that brings with it, sort of just last words, closing words to you.
Certainly. First and foremost, before I get into the rest of the day, I want to make sure I give a specific shout out to Waterloo, Coach Bertoia, and the entirety of that staff. That day was run so smoothly from start to finish. The setup was great. There was plenty of food and drink for all the attendees and all the media and staff that were there as well. Nobody really skipped a beat in terms of the actual staff and how they were doing things. Things were crisp, and it was run through really, really, really effectively. So I wanted to give a specific shout out to Waterloo and that staff because it was fantastic, and especially, you know, obviously the indoor facilities and everything that they had there. The biggest thing there, once again, it's very easy to tell who's been working and who's been really trying to craft their game, trying to do their thing, whatever. Like I said, with Ethan Kalra, he was able to do all of these really great things from any position on that offensive line. Whereas there were some other guys who, credit to them, they were constantly putting themselves into a different scenario to try to be the best they can. It was very easy to tell somebody's a lot smoother in the right-handed stance versus a left-handed. Some receivers catch a lot better going to the right than they do to the left or in the chest or whatever the case may be. So it was very easy to tell who had been training for these specific events at least and who had not been. I don't want to say that anybody wasn't training because these are athletes. You have your chance to get into the CFL, whatever. But that was something that was really stuck out to me in that the fluidity of things. Even when you're seeing guys running the 40, running the cone drill and that, you see people who are smooth, natural runners who are going through things, and then other people who might be a little jagged or a little stiff as they're going through everything there. But overall, it was an awesome day. Getting a chance to connect with so many other players and coaches there who were at this event as well, and just getting a chance to get excited about Canadian football again in March before everything really starts kicking off later on. Even like the summer leagues are just starting to practice right now. So this was the biggest jolt in my system of like football, football, it's only like 90 days or something like that until the CFL kicks off, and then we're right back into football season again. But it was an awesome day. It was an awesome event. Shout out once again to the CFL and to the Waterloo staff for a fantastic day. I loved every second of it.
Well, I'm so happy you got to be there. Enjoy the day. I know Dakota was along there with you, and of course, getting to see Deshaun and everyone else who's doing their part covering this league to be able to shine a spotlight on these great athletes, these great programs, these great coaches, support staffs, and everyone who makes U Sport football and obviously specifically our OUA football putting it in a position right now that has it being as strong as it is, because you know you and me have been around this game for a while now, Tom, and I do think it's in a really good spot right now. That'll wrap up our conversation about the Invitational Pod, the Invitational Combine. The National is still, at the time of recording, close to 2 weeks, week and a half to 2 weeks away from now. No doubt we'll hop on again after that one comes and goes, or if any news breaks about that. Hey, thank you again for everyone that was along the journey for the exit meeting interviews. Next, you'll be hearing from us talking with Sir Elgersma. Maybe you've heard of him, the MVP of our little league that we call the OUA. So me and Tom will talk to you next week right here at the 55.